Being protected by the arms of Lord Sri Krishna, always remain fearless in every respect. And therefore their feet trample over the Sudharma assembly house, which the best demigods deserved, but which was taken away from them. Therefore, those who are directly servitors of the Lord are protected by the Lord from all fearfulness. And they also enjoy the best of things, even if they are forcibly accumulated. The Lord is equal in behavior to all living beings. He is partial to his pure devotees, being very affectionate toward them. The city of Dwarka was flourishing, being enriched with the best of things in the material world. The state assembly house is constructed according to the dignity of a particular state. In the heavenly planets, the state assembly house called Sudharma was deserving of the dignity of the best of the demigods. Such an assembly house is never meant for any state on the globe, because a human being on earth is unable to construct it, however far a particular state may be materially advanced. But during the time of Lord Krishna's presence on the earth, the members of the Yadu family forcibly brought the celestial assembly house to earth and placed it in Dwarka. They were able to use such force because they were certain of the indulgence and protection of the Supreme Lord Krishna. In other words, the Lord is provided with the best things in the universe by his pure devotees. Lord Krishna was provided with all kinds of comforts and facilities within the universe by the members of the Yadu dynasty. And in return, such servitors of the Lord were protected and fearless. A forgetful conditioned soul is fearful, but a liberated soul is never fearful. Just as a small child, completely dependent on the mercy of the Father, is never fearful of anyone. Fearfulness is a sort of illusion for a living being when he is in slumber and forgetting his eternal relation with the Lord. Since the living being is never to die by his constitution, as stated in Bhagavad Gita, then what is the cause of fearfulness? A person may be fearful of a tiger in a dream, but another man who is awake by his side sees no tiger there. The tiger is a myth for both of them, naming the person dreaming and the person awake, because actually there is no tiger. But the man forgetful of his awakened life is fearful, whereas the man who has not forgotten his position is not at all fearful. Thus the members of the Yadu dynasty were fully awake in their service to the Lord, and therefore there was no tiger for them to be afraid of at any time. Even if there were a real tiger, the Lord was there to protect them. Translation again. The great heroes of the Knights, being protected by the arms of Lord Shri Krishna, always remain fearful, always remain fearless in every respect. And therefore their feet trample over the Sudama assembly house, which the best in the house deserved, but which was taken away from them. This verse is giving you cosmological information that different sections of the universe have their different advantages and amenities, and you can't generally mix them. The facilities on the higher planets are meant for those who have the karma enough to reside there. And you can't drag those facilities down to Earth, which is in the middle planetary system. Middle planetary system, as I'm sure you discussed, means mixed happiness and distress. Lower planetary system means all distress. And upper planetary system means all material happiness. But there's always anxiety everywhere in this material world. The residents of the upper planets, they feel anxiety that when their good karma wears out, runs out, that's the end. They fall back down the middle planetary system. Also, they feel on the highest planets in the upper planetary system, like Lord Brahma's planet, Brahmaloka, they feel anxiety because they see the sufferings of living entities on the other planets. Everywhere in this universe, there is anxiety. That's why the material world is called Kunta, place of anxiety, and the spiritual world is called Vaikuntha, where there's no anxiety. So here we are in the place of anxiety, the universe of anxiety, trying to find peace. We have to wake up and see the contradiction. We've come to a place of anxiety and we're looking for peace. And as you heard Sunday, some people actually don't even know what peace is. They think that there'll be peace, even however they define it, just by everybody doing whatever they want and living according to how each person sees best. They think that's peace. They don't understand that that is animal life. Human beings are meant to adhere to supreme authority. That's the peace form they give in Bhagavad Gita by Krishna. Bhoktanam yagata prasadam sarva loka maheshwaram sudam sarva bhutanam gyatram aham shantam rishtati. When you can understand that Krishna is the supreme enjoyer of all endeavors, all sacrifices. He's the controller of all planetary systems, sarva loka maheshwaram. Sunam sarva bhutanam, and Krishna is the friend of all the entities. Then you can feel peace because you'll be released from the pains of material existence. Sometimes Prabhupada uses the expression pangs of material existence. You know what a pang is, like when you have a toothache. Everyone's had a toothache at some time. So it just throbs with pain. And in between the throbs, you might think, oh, now I'm happy. But you know the throb and pain is going to come back. And finally, you can't take it anymore. Not only does the pain disturb you, but also the fact that the gaps, the intervals between the pains, you know, are just temporary. So it's very frustrating. You know, I can't really be happy. Every 15 seconds, the pangs of pain come. So how can I enjoy those 15 seconds of so-called peace? Now, according to the materialist understanding, you're supposed to focus on those 15 seconds of peace in between the pangs of the toothache. And at the end of your life, you're supposed to say, yeah, I had some good moments in between the throbs of pain. There was some peace. Yeah. Now, who will settle for that? No. When you have a toothache, you immediately want to know what to do. You immediately want to find a doctor, a dentist. You immediately want to get some remedy. But what about the pangs of material existence? We don't care. We're just hypnotized by the intervals between the pangs. And if you try to enjoy the body, enjoy the mind, feel appreciated, and show appreciation as if we can do something for someone. It's amazing how we're such tiny creatures, so ineffectual. We cannot solve our problem of birth and death, yet we want to help somebody else. Please let me help you. Real humility means to admit you can't help anybody. We're just creatures caught in the web of time. And whenever time wants, we're knocked down. Finished. But still, I would like to help you. It's like men, they like to present themselves as helpers. Yes, I actually have abilities. But the real ability is to stop the cycle of birth and death. You see, the ladies see countless men here and there advertising themselves, I can help you, I can stop the cycle of repeated birth and death. No. So that is their qualification. But the ladies, they're not interested in stopping the cycle of birth and death. Therefore, they allow themselves to be exploited. Topless and bottomless so-called beauty. Everybody is just scamming on one another, offering false hopes of help and succor and comfort. If you can just promise me some happiness and help me ease the pain in this world, I'll do anything for you, and you'll do anything for me. But no one can promise that. Like ladies, they like to visualize your romance. I'll be cherished. I'll be cared for. I'll be, my every whim will be catered to. Every time I bat my eyelash, it will be noted with great attention. And the men, they like to feel they're very competent. Yes, I'll solve your problems. Yes, I'll make you feel secure. I'll create a world of security amidst this world of anxiety. Just depend on me. I'll engineer peace in this world for you. I'll devise satisfaction. How can anybody do anything for anyone? Everyone is a puppet in the hands of time. And we make all these bravado promises. The person that comes to me is how to stop this cheating. How to understand we cannot help anyone. That takes great humility. It's arrogance to think you can help someone in the material sense. All you do is make their problems worse. But people don't see that their problems worsen by becoming more attached to material life. If you're associating with someone who is increasing your attachment to material life, your problems are becoming worse. No one thinks like that. Oh, he's a nice person. She's a nice person. We make nice music together. Never mind that you're going deeper in illusion. That's not a problem. The whole point is to have some so-called happiness in between the pangs. And if you really want to go deep into ignorance, the mode of ignorance, you take intoxication to dull the pain artificially. Or just like when you go to the dentist, they give you some Novocaine so they can work on your tooth. But you know, the Novocaine will wear off. I remember once I went to the dentist, he had to do something. So he gave me Novocaine, and he warned, it's going to wear off. And then he went to do codeine, so I could do a prescription for codeine. But I didn't want to take the codeine. Codeine is legal dope. Very powerful, especially if you're not taking these kind of things for so many years. Just a little coating will knock you out for days. So I decided, oh, I'll do without. Sure enough, when the Novocaine wore off, oh, this horrible pain was there. I'd get an ice pack and, you know, lie down with your face on an ice pack. When you go to the dentist, you really are confronted with the truth of the material body. When I go to the dentist, I do a certain meditation. And the dentist is drilling or pulling. Just see, this is the truth of the body that you thought you could enjoy. This is the truth of the body that you thought stimulating it would be so nice. Now feel the real truth. Actually, beyond that, of course, the living enemy has nothing to do with the pains and pleasures of the body. But if you're going to be attached to your body, at least appreciate the whole truth about it. At least be in the Bhakti conception with the complete picture. Better, of course, is to understand you're not the body, as Prabhupada's explaining in this purport. There's no tiger. You're dreaming a tiger's attacking you. Someone who's awake sees you're having a nightmare. Everything is fine, but you're having a nightmare dreaming. So many distresses have come upon you. But the person who's having a nightmare thinks it's for real. It takes great humility to understand, what can I do for somebody else? If I'm not influencing them and inspiring them to go back to Godhead, what am I doing? I'm inspiring and influencing them to become more attached to the body. That's why we have our negative principle. To stop that bodily madness so we can make some spiritual advancement. The regular principles don't make you into a transcendentalist, they make you a human being. That means we don't have human beings today. They don't know what it means even to be a human being in the material sense. Human being means control of the senses. By breaking the regular principles, we become attached to the body. We increase the fever of material attachment. It's like starting a fire and then pouring water on the fire and then trying to light it again. Campfire just, whatever. Lit a fire and then it rained and you had to try to light the wet wood. Of course, you probably were able to do it, but it's not what you'd like to do, right? Everyone wants dry wood, yes? So, you can just imagine starting a fire and having it rained on and lighting and same thing goes on, dead times, very frustrating. Yes, the Hare Krishna mantra is possible to purify anyone, even someone who repeatedly indulges in sinful activity, but it'll take a very long time. Very slow and very excruciating process. You can see that. Sometimes you know people who take the Krishna classes on Monday and Maya on Tuesday, and try to get back into it on Wednesday, and then comes a weekly cycle or a monthly cycle, even yearly cycle. 1 year they're Krishna conscious, next year they're fully alive. Very excruciating lives. So the regular principles are there to protect our self-interest. To make us human beings and make us susceptible to getting out of this world of anxiety. And you shouldn't be ashamed that you want to get out of this world of anxiety. It's not your home. Why should you be ashamed about getting out of the place? It's not your home. But we have these desires to want to enjoy this artificial place. It's only by constant hearing that we can rise above the daily onslaught of illusion. You're noticing that on one day, you're chanting nicely, you're reading nicely, you're doing nice service, and the next day, still, a wave of Maya is there, you've got to push it back. Yes, that's the way it is, because you are living in the wrong atmosphere. You're like, you've been dropped in the middle of the ocean. In this material world, the ocean of birth and death. And so, the waves are going to come one after another. So every day, you have to commit yourself to Krishna consciousness and hearing properly. And every day you can remain immune from those waves. But don't think, because I was good on Monday, therefore I can relax on Tuesday. And don't be angry at Krishna that, although you were absorbed on Monday, Tuesday you felt Maya hammering on your door. Now, Tuesday, you have to be enthusiastic, just like Monday. And as you steadily are enthusiastic day after day after day, you'll notice a difference. You have to convince Maya that you don't want her around. That takes some convincing. Maya doesn't reduce her intensity very easily. You have to do some convincing. How do you convince? By demonstrating your attachment to devotional service throughout all circumstances. Not just good times, but bad times too. You have to be in all seasons devotee. Like the weather in Wellington. One minute it's sunny, the next minute it's rain. Only Wellington. Most of the North Island is like that. Tasmania, Melbourne, Victoria, Australia. Four seasons in one day. So, you don't stop your duties. Does anybody here stop what they're doing because the Wellington weather has changed? If you're going on Sankirtan, you know, you just find a place which has a overhead. You can stand in. Does anyone cancel their appointments because of the weather? No. You're just ready to go about your affairs in all circumstances. You're properly protected. Maybe you've got some sacred Gore-Tex garments. But apparently you don't stop your duties. Have you decided, Dylan, that according to the weather you won't go to work or you will go to work? No. We have to be like that about serving Krishna. And then you're able to convince Maya that you're serious business. Otherwise, if you're fickle and whimsical, then Maya does not take you seriously. It doesn't take your devotional efforts seriously, and you get harassed. But by working up a momentum every day of steady devotional service, sacrificing for Krishna's senses, then your own senses find relief from the onslaught of material energy. This is the art of bhakti. Instead of sacrificing for my senses and going to hell, let me sacrifice for Krishna's senses, and that way I'll be immune to the harassment by my own senses. Therefore, a devotee is simply praying for a chance to serve Krishna. And Krishna says, no one's more dear, no service is more dear than spreading my glories to others. So this is the secret of devotional life. Steadiness, day after day, plugging away in a selfless way. But you won't do that unless you know something about Krishna. You won't sacrifice for Krishna unless you're steadily hearing about Krishna. In the beginning, you may not have any taste. But if you keep at it every day, that taste will come. You'll become attached to hearing about Krishna. In the beginning, it seems, well, every day we just hear about Krishna. We have class and we chant. That's all it's going to take. It's going to really work on you. Just like when you first start your chant, at least 16 rounds. It's the most major thing that ever happened to your life. You look around at first, before you start chanting, you're around, and you're just dabbling, wondering, what is this Krishna house? What is that? You're looking at everybody's faces. They look kind of peaceful. You know, this one looks okay. This one's struggling a bit. This one looks pretty sane. Yeah, maybe I'll give it a whirl. I mean, even the struggling ones look better than me. And I'm pretty bored, and who knows? It might relieve my stress and anxieties. When they sing Hare Krishna and Kirtan, it's kind of catching and soothing. Maybe chanting on these will have the same result. And then you associate with devotees, and they're always telling you, you should chant, you should chant. And of course, your first reaction for most people is, what's the big deal about chanting, fingering some beads? And somehow they're mystically and magically, just by your association with devotees, you figure, I'll chant one or two, what's the big deal, you know? And I'll close my head. I can chant one or two. That's all enough, you know. I mean, it'll make them happy, you know. I'll just do it to make them happy. They're nice people. So then you start chanting one or two rounds a day. And I haven't figured out yet how it happens. But somehow you start increasing. It's due to association. Somehow the effect of devotees and associating with them is such that you want to chant more, even without realizing. I mean, they're always chanting. So after a while, although you're rebellious in the beginning, mystical process of associating with devotees, you start chanting more. I can't remember, for me, how I how I went from one or two beads a day getting up your ass. All I remember is I was laying in bed and I decided, I've been reading the books for 6 months. All the books just, you know, they say everybody chant Hare Krishna, but it's weird how it makes us like it. So I remember just laying in bed, you know, I just decided, yeah, I'll chant one bead, see how it is. So I had these beads. I don't know how I got the beads. I think some clever Sankirtan lady had slipped me some beads. So I had some beads, and because I refused to go to the temple, I read the books. I used to meet the devotees. They were distributing books in the big bus terminal in New York. I was commuting. My fiance was going to finish university 2 hours away, so I would walk down the campus. So I had to run the gauntlet for the devotees.
How do you get into visit her for? Are you just going to say hello and goodbye? And
I remember once they even told me,
look, we like you. We have to tell you one thing. Wick, she's a smiler.
She what?
She's a smiler. We know. You can trust us. You know. She's Maya. Generally, women are Maya. Unless they're Krishna conscious. So you're just in Maya being attracted to Maya.
But we really care for each other.
Come on, you know what your so-called fear is.
They must have slipped me some beads. I don't still can't remember how I got these beads. But I just remember laying in bed and reach for these beads. I, you know, I said, yeah, I'm laying in bed. I mean, I'm relaxing. So what would be the harm in chanting a bead or two? I'm already feeling comfortable. I'm already, you know, having pleasure by laying here at, you know, 7 o'clock in the morning. So, yeah, I'll try a beat or two. I remember doing it. Chant another beat. Okay, that's it for today. And then the next day, I think I chanted a few more beads. I don't remember now how I got up to one round. I just don't remember. How did it happen? It's definitely mystical. It's the Lord in the heart. We say, ah, you're starting to chant my glories again. I'll give you inspiration to do more. It has to be a super soul, because I can't remember consciously making the decision. It just started happening. So then, by the time I did move into the temple, I was chanting 13 rounds a day. So, it's like that. We don't actually know how we got going. It's due to the super soul, and also we don't know how we're keeping on, pushing on. It's also due to the inspiration of the super soul and the association with the devotees and the good guidance we're getting. So you first start chanting a bit, and then some other mystic rate will increase. And then when you finally get up to the prescribed medical prescription, at least 16 rounds, all of a sudden you're shocked. It works. My whole life is changing. You feel like the sun has risen nearby. You can imagine you're sitting here and the sun rises right next to you. All of a sudden your life was completely different. Everything is changing. Your perceptions have changed. You feel like a completely different person. You're shocked. And then you become very eager to be Krishna conscious. It works.
I can't believe it. It actually works. It's doing something.
And you start becoming interested in Krishna. Who is this Krishna? I want to hear more about Krishna. Yeah, I don't mind doing something for Krishna. Service for Krishna. Yeah, why not? Starts to feel a bit natural. And then you start to accelerate. So you may ask, what slows down that acceleration? There are impediments, and you have to become mindful. If you don't treat your creeper of devotion properly, can wither. Just like when you have a little plant, it's like a seedling. You have to take care of it very nicely, protect it from dangerous elements. Water it carefully. You have to learn how to protect your life from material desires. It takes work. It's a daily thing. You have to learn how to water your devotional creeper. Sometimes we forget how our life, even as older devotees, can easily be changed just by chanting more Hare Krishna and reading Srimad Bhagavatam and committing ourselves to more devotional service. Krishna consciousness is a constant process of re-enlistment. It's like somebody joins the Navy or the Army and enlists. So Krishna consciousness is a constant process of enlistment. We always have to be joining up at every moment, renewing our love with Krishna. It's not that Krishna is insecure and we have to remind him all the time that we really want to serve him. It's that often that women, they have to be reassured at least 50% of the day that they're cared for. That Krishna is not insecure. In the material world, a man is supposed to always offer security because the women feel insecure. Even if they're high-powered career women, when they come home, they release all their insecurities. So, the man, he promises security. He can't fulfill, but he promises. That's the whole point. Everybody in the material world, they're peddling these false promises. So the man peddles his false promises, and the woman peddles her false promises. She wants to trade bodily delights for security. And the man, he wants to pretend he's offering security so he can get the bodily delights. So this way the deal goes on, and they call this love. Krishna is not insecure. He doesn't need that his devotees constantly remind him that they are trying to love Krishna. But we need to do that because we forget. And it's part of the process of bhakti to constantly reaffirm your service to Krishna. It's not that Krishna needs, but we need. By constantly reevaluating our commitment to Krishna's service, that helps us to get free from the clutches of Mithyananda. Because Mithyananda is constantly harassing you. You just gotta get used to it. Just like if you're living by the sea, you hear the waves coming constantly. It doesn't mean you stop what you're doing, it's because the sound of the waves is always crashing in the background. Or here on Arrow Street, these devotees in the front rooms here. There's traffic all the time, but you know, every time a car goes by, you know, oh, did you hear that? Let's stop what we're doing. It's a car. Have you ever done that? No, you know it. They're just out there, they're going back and forth. We got things to do. So it's like that with Maya. It's always in the background. The material is always there. Come on, come on, come on. Let me ask Peter Simpson. Come on, come on. Think about this, think about that. Don't you want this? Don't you want that? It's there in the background, but you have to learn just to leave it in the background. And gradually, by your intense engagement in devotional service, even the background noise will become oblivious to it. Maya is not actually for the advanced devotee. For the advanced devotee, the so-called disturbances of Maya propel the devotee back to Godhead. The same thing that used to be an impediment becomes a means to accelerate. The same Maya that was illusion becomes Maya mercy. That's in the higher stages of devotional service. After you convince Krishna that you really don't want Maya. And that takes some serious convincing because we've been in delusion for more births than we can count. The conditioned soul is described as a nadi, beginningless. Your material existence, you can't figure out when it began. Why is that? Because your material existence began before time. Before time manifested the material world, you were existing in your conditioned state. And you are injected into the material world by the glance of Mahavishnu. So your conditioned life started before time manifested the material world. So you can't say, when did I start my conditioned life? When? The meaning means time. That's why Bhakti Vinod Thakur sings Anadi Karma Phale. You can't trace out when you're karmic career began. Despite you can say, well, I began studying at the Polytechnic University of the state. You can't do that with a conditioner, because it began beyond time. You don't know for how many cycles of universal creation and destruction you've been through, you don't know. Krishna has his Sudharma assembly house, and it's free. Anyone who goes into the Sudharma assembly house is free from the six whips of material nature. Now, such a house should not be on the earth planet, but the Yadus were so powerful, they went to the heavenly planets and brought it by their prowess. Even the demigods have to submit. Sometimes it's said that Indra gave the house, sometimes it's said the Yadus went and forcibly took it. The point is that Indra, when he sees he's going to be beaten, or when he is beaten, then he is. Just like with the Parijata flower. He fought Krishna first, and then he said, okay, you take it. So, the Yadus, they brought the Sudharma assembly house to earth and put it in Dwarka. And anyone who, for the time that someone was in that house, they would not feel the six whips of material nature. What are those six whips? Hunger, thirst, lamentation, illusion, death, and old age. Now, you never think of yourself as being whipped by these six things. No, you think, oh, I'm young, and shall I do this, shall I do that? What do I think is good? What will be a fulfilling career for me? What will be my fancy? I'm a young man, got a long life ahead of me. How can I make my mark in this world? As my father used to tell me, yeah, leave some footprints in the sand after you go. I should have pointed out to him, yeah, after you go, the footprints in the sand also go because the ladies wash them away. While some kids come and they, you know, step all over your footprints and they're obliterated. In Vrindavan, Krishna's footprints are never obliterated. All the animals and human beings, they know these are Krishna's footprints, don't walk on them. Everything in relation to Krishna is Krishna. Therefore, Akura, when he was coming to Vrindavan from the tour to fetch Krishna and Balaram on behalf of Kamsa, when Akura got to the outskirts of Vrindavan, he saw Krishna's footprints. Krishna's footprints are special. The soles of his feet have special markings. Flag, rod, thunderbolt, like that. So, Akura saw the footprints. He jumps off his chariot and rolls in the dust on these footprints. I would ask people, who do you know? You think you love someone? If you saw their footprints on the ground, would you jump off on the car and roll with you? No way. Just jump out of the car and spontaneously roll in the dust in their footprints. And say, oh, how glorious this is, how glorious this is. But that's what Akura was doing. How glorious this is, rolling in the dust in Krishna's footprints. So leaving footprints in the sand is foolishness for an ordinary person. For an ordinary person. Although, after Krishna disappeared, one of the remembrances of Krishna is that how can the earth planet, which was so fortunate receiving the touch of Krishna's lotus feet and being decorated with the footprints of Krishna's feet, how can the earth planet still be the same? The earth planet was in intimate touch with Krishna's feet, receiving the footprints. Now Krishna is gone. We should think about these six whips. That's part of being Krishna conscious. You're not just existing like, you know, in a neutral world and you just have to find out what you want. You take a, maybe you go to a counselor, career guidance, well, let's see, you'll take this test and we'll find out what you're good at, what kind of personality you have. We'll match that with the right job. Anyone here make one of those things? into a career counselor. Yes. What did they do? They try to evaluate your personality.
Not really. It was more what I just want to see myself doing in some years.
They present this illusion, you know, that the material world is just out there, and you just have to choose the right thing and you'll be fulfilled. Tell me, you never went, got any career guidance or anything like that? Yes, what was it? What would you like to do? Have you seen any interesting jobs? So what did you say? Oh, yes, I've always aspired to be an accountant.
I wanted to be an actor.
Can you imagine Johnny just the master of precision? I can just see your client up.
Here's my architectural drawing of your house. Oh, I forgot to put the bath in your house. No, we're opposite. The kitchen? I'm sorry. Very busy, you know. Yeah, I'll put a kitchen in. Every house should have a kitchen and a bathroom.
Anyway, this is the same illusion that Maya presents in general to us. What would you like to do? Have you seen anything? Have you seen any Maya that you find interesting? Do you see any persons in Maya who you'd like to imitate? Just look at that one. Look how happy she is. She's got a man of her choice. Look at that one. Look how happy he is. He's just gliding from one woman to another without being tied down. Wouldn't you like to do that? Look at this one. He's got money. Look at this one. She's got fashions. So this way Maya flashes these things before your eyes. And seems so conducive and so understanding. What would you like to do? What are you interested in, my dear conditioned soul? Have you seen anything out there that you really want? Without constant hearing, you can't remain immune to this. We have weaknesses. There are parts of us that beg for material fulfillment, and you have to be mindful of that. You have to be aware of your weaknesses. You have to be aware of the parts of you that are susceptible to propositions from Maya. Be mindful of that and fill those weaknesses with Krishna consciousness. If you have a hole in the heart, don't expect the material energy to fill it. Just fill it with bhakti. Your intelligence can be sometimes captured by Maya due to interest in material things, then fill your intelligence with Krishna. It's like when I became a new devotee, I analyzed, I said, there's one thing that's going to nail me. It's too, because background of too much mundane education. So I've got to make a vow right now, otherwise I'm finished, I'll never get off the ground in Krishna consciousness. So I vow, as I said before, I wasn't going to read a word of anything material, any non-Krishna consciousness, if you're not one word. And I did that for 5 years. Until when I went to Eastern Europe and I had to keep abreast of the material situation in communist countries, I didn't read one word in a newspaper for 5 years and felt no loss. So we all have to take stock of what our weaknesses are and think how to fill it instead of filling the gap, the so-called gap. It's like an illusion seeing a tiger in a dream. If the soul has no gap, the soul is complete as part of Krishna, but because we're identifying with Maya, we're identifying with these bodies, we think that there's, you know, insufficiencies in our life. So those imagined insufficiencies are what you're going to try to fill with Maya. So you've got to fill them with Krishna. Fill your intelligence with Krishna. And bhakti takes great emotional drive. Bhakti is executed from the heart and the intelligence, so both have to be full of Krishna. You fill your heart with Krishna by chanting from the heart and doing service from the heart. putting your heartfelt drive into rendering service to Krishna. Then the service becomes very tasty to Krishna. But you start doing your service in a routine way, then how are you going to be satisfied? You're leaving your heart wide open to be full of other things. So you have to take stock of yourself. What gaps am I leaving for Maya? What insufficiencies do I think I have? What tigers am I seeing in my dreams? If you feel, there's a bit of a gap in the heart, there's a bit of a gap in the intelligence, then you have to work to fill that with Krishna consciousness. There's a gap in the heart. You try to chant more from the heart. Actually, I tell you, when I read Srimad Bhagavatam, I know it's an emotional book. I'm reading for the heart as well as the intelligence. I'm soaking not only the intelligence, but also soaking the heart. This is a book of pure emotions. It's not just dry metaphysical knowledge, it's an emotional experience. Just like now, Yudhisthira is an affection of emotion. He's hinting that Krishna has disappeared. He knows Arjuna's come back. And Yudhisthira's been observing the omens. And so, he's starting to bring himself around to accepting that Krishna has disappeared. This is very intense, more than we can imagine. So if you read the Bhagavatam for your heart, you lay your heart into the Bhagavatam, let it saturate your heart, the heart's protected. So don't make the mistake of thinking that hearing and chanting is just like some kind of intellectual thing. Devotees' hearts are satisfied by hearing and chanting about Krishna. But some of us aren't aware that hearing and chanting take care of the heart. Therefore, we think we have to turn to other things. Devotional service is done from the heart. If you understand these things, you'll be able to fortify yourself. Well, what about the sense of touch? Conditioned souls like touch. Man wants to touch woman, woman wants to touch man. So use your sense of touch in Krishna consciousness. Sometimes I'm holding the bottle. Yes. I'm holding it. I'm touching the pages. This is the literary incarnation of Krishna. I'm holding it, aren't I? I'm engaging my sense of touch. What else? Something else. Oh, when you dance in kirtan. Sometimes, you have a desire to do something with your body. Especially as you get older and you can't do long hours at the same time and things like that. What do you do with your body? Even if you are young and you have lots of energy, still there's always more energy that you have to figure out what to do with. Otherwise it'll be easier to stay. So, the Maya presents to you, you have a body. Now all you need to do is this and that with another body, and life will become so interesting. Something to do, you know? It's not that you're really into it, it's just something to do. You know, body interaction fills the day. Interesting, you know? Instead, you think, I have this body, so I raise both hands in the air. I jump. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. You're doing something with your body. It's your body. You're doing something. So not doing kirtan when you're chanting that, you can think, I'm doing something with my body. You are. You're doing with your body what Krishna wants. So you should think about that, doing kirtan. Get, you know, do something with your body. We don't repress bodily activity in Krishna consciousness. Of course, we're dancing for the pleasure of Krishna. You can dance from the heart with your body. protected from by your Indian eyes. And then you won't even feel the six whips of material nature, and you should always know about them. You can see, for example, the people we were talking to at the Sunday feast Sunday. They can't understand that they're defeated, they're controlled, they're bound up, they're whipped. No. They're just seeing the few seconds of peace in between the pangs of the toothache. And they want to make that gap longer and longer. They don't understand that in the material world, there's simply going to be pangs. You can't get rid of them, just like you can't get rid of the waves in the ocean. You have to get out of the material conception of life. We need purification to scrub clean these dirty conceptions. You can do it if you're determined. It's like, I don't know if you've ever been really dirty. Doing some hard work. Maybe you're trying to fix a car or something. You're trying to fix your own car. Yeah.
Good idea.
Good enough. Oh,
it was working for my father.
What do you have to do? So you have to really work to get clean, didn't you? You must have done something really good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Good job. And your hands up to the air. So you had to really scrub to get it off. Even with that special soap, right?
Yeah.
But still, you had to work at it. Just stay on a few days.
About a week.
Yeah. Did you freak out?
Not really.
Why not? And you knew it was going to go away in time, right? But why should we freak out when Maya attacks us? I thought all I had to do was chant and then all this wouldn't bother me. You knew in a week it's going to go away. So suddenly, why can't we have that much conviction about bhakti yoga that let me just go on and the attacks of Maya will go away? You tried to fix your own daughter's work. Got the grease and everything, your finger together. Like when I came back from India this time, my heels of my feet, they were cracked. And from walking around barefoot, the heels were, they were dirty, but it's kind of dirt that wouldn't come off. It's, just a shower, hot water, whatever, it wouldn't come off. It took some time. Even got out the pumice stone and still, it took some time. And you have to go at it with determination. When you've got printing ink on or grease, it's in your fingernails. You really got to work at it. So that's what we have to do about Krishna consciousness. If we want to be purified from Maya, we have to work at it. And we are lazy. Engagement in sinful life makes you lazy. Let's just wallow in the desires. You always have to be making a campaign against the material energy. Always has to be a campaign. Some of you don't like that. Look, I made an effort last month and a month before. Like, come on, Krishna, why can't I just, let it be? Constantly you have to endeavor. Constant love. Then Krishna says, I'll personally give you instruction how to go back to God.
Alright, any questions?
Have a regulated schedule and stick to it, no matter what. Especially for Sankirtan devotees, you decide I'm going to be out this many hours, and you don't come back until those hours are finished. Make a reasonable amount, not to turn yourself into a martyr. But, these many hours, but I don't come back until I've done these many hours. And then you build up your strength. And when marathons come, you're easy to, you're able to put in extra hours. It's like building muscles, You just go out and say, I'm going to stay out a certain time, come hell or high water, then I go back. Not that you go out and, this person shouldn't be there, and then you run back. Yeah. You have to have a plan and stick to it. Then you build your strength. You get beyond your own whims by sticking to a plan. And have someone help you stick to the plan. That way your mind won't cheat you. This is our problem. We're just looking for one solution and that's it. Then you can coast. This is Kali Yuga. You try to capture this psychology. Okay, we just get the sadhana right once and then we're on easy street. When will we get it into our heads that bhakti is a daily thing? You daily have to sharpen the knife. Daily. It's not that you sharpen a knife once and use it, and then you'll have to sharpen it again. But every day we've got to know. It's a constant effort, and that constant effort pleases Krishna. But why are you just looking for, okay, one time we're going to do this, and then... This is impersonalism, actually. That I just adjust once, and then I can be impersonal. I don't have to consider Krishna's senses after that. I did it once. Now I just go into, you know, the void. I just go into, you know, being callous. No, why can't you be personal to Krishna every day? What happens? A man says to a woman, I was nice to you once last year. You've got to, you know, reaffirm every moment of the day. Generally speaking. So why do you say to Krishna, okay, we got it together, we made plans for a good sadhana once last year, and now why do we have to every day think of how to serve you better? What's wrong with every day continuing to evaluate how you can do things better? It's natural that adjustment always has to be there. This is the material world. Things never remain the same. The material world is constantly changing. You have a plan, that's good. You have to constantly adjust for that plan. Or, look at it another way, what do you do if you're in a hospital and the patients around you aren't taking their medicine? You also say, I won't take it. You have to have a bit of your own intelligence. Everyone knows what to do. It's easier, of course, to do things when everyone's doing it, but still. Actually, you have to become, I remember someone telling me when I was in devotee, you have to become so convinced about Krishna consciousness that if everyone around you decides to leave into your energy, you'll still go on going. That's your individual responsibility. That's why the books are there, to convince you of your individual responsibility. Don't mean everyone around you is slipping. Yeah. Have it more important. Just you have to find the right blend, and because you're sacrificing for preaching, you are giving up a little bit of your imaginary peace for the sake of others. Neophyte devotees think, I just want my own peace. Devotees who are advancing know there's no peace without pleasing Krishna. Krishna is pleased when others become Krishna conscious. Neophyte means I just want to suit myself. What do I like to do? I get turned on by doing this. Yeah, I'll do that. This is karma yoga. You're attached to doing something that you figure I'll give the results to Krishna. I always say, when I became a new devotee back in the early 70s, every other young man who joined the Krishna consciousness movement was a guitar player. And they all had the same idea in mind. You know, play the guitar for Krishna and become famous in that way. Just write Krishna consciousness. So you had a temple full, you know, like 50 guys were all guitar players and all knew the best way to serve Krishna. I just need time to practice my guitar. I'll make a hit record like George Harrison. I'll spray Krishna hands all over the world. Each one was convinced like that. And each one, before he was a devotee, was about to break into the big time. That's when he became a devotee. They were all convinced. I was just about to put out that record. I was just on the verge of stardom. So now that I'm a devotee, I just want to use that ability in Krishna service. You know, like a temple full of 50 guys all saying it. That's karma yoga. Bhakti means what does Krishna want. I'm not attached to what I do, and I'm not attached to the results. So, certainly you're going to meet a lot of people, a lot of devotees who practice karma yoga. And we don't criticize, but we should know what the higher standard is. Some of us here, you may just, you know, end up practicing karma yoga. But at least we should know what the higher standard is. So, in answer to your question further, it's a constant process of evaluation, reevaluation, adjustment. Anything else?
Mm-hmm.
Yes? Krishna is the soul of the soul. When you like the body, it's because the body has the soul there. Without the soul, there's no bodily function. But you like the soul because the soul is part of Krishna. You are part of the Supreme Self. You're not the complete whole. You can't be understood separate from Krishna. To understand the self, you have to understand Krishna, because you're part of Krishna. Mama eva amsha jiva loke. Krishna says, Mama eva amsha. You should certainly understand you're my part. Amsha is a very intimate part in Sanskrit. So when you really care about yourself, you're caring about Krishna, because you're part of Krishna. But material life means to think I'm separate from Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna.